You may approach when you're ready.
I'm happy. I've heard two cases, one of which I've recorded, one of which was tax foreclosure. Now you get to talk about my case. It's one of the better ones I've sat through. I'm just, if I have some time left over, fine. I'll use it for rebuttal, otherwise I'll just talk.
Well, your yellow light will come on when you have 2 minutes remaining.
A two-minute rush, thank you. May it please the court, my name is Andrew W. Hoffmeister, Chief Deputy Buffalo County Attorney. I represent the state of Nebraska in a contempt hearing. We used to go droning on, may it please the court, Ms. Bergen, Mr. Markers here as a court-appointed attorney, about how facts are. What I'm going to talk to you about, so I'm not sure this court's entirely familiar with one of the issues I want addressed, is the referee system. This entire case, since 1996, has been a referee case. One of the points I have, 2 points, I believe she was found in contempt, should have been found in contempt. The other one is the district court should have heard a little bit more evidence.
I'm very interested to hear your position on that.
I usually am on the other side.
What authority do you have to allow the district judge to take additional time?
I have 4 unreported, unprecedented, actually, 1, 2, 3, Court of Appeals single opinion written that they do talk about additional testimony. The last one in 2011, Lancaster County says it's a de novo review, although their own rules say it's de novo on the record.
De novo on the record means no new evidence.
Lancaster County's own rules. No other district has such a rule, nor does the Supreme Court have that rule. Referees handle anything from...
Buffalo County has the de novo on the record?
We don't have a rule.
Okay. Where did you say the de novo on the record from?
That only is in Lancaster County. It's a court rule. But the 4 cases I just started looking last night where they all came from. At least 3 came from Lancaster County where they have that rule. And they talk about additional testimony being taken before a district court judge. Now,
none of the cases discuss the issue specifically of whether it's appropriate to receive new evidence.
In a disestablishment case, which is Douglas County, the only time it's been mentioned, BM versus Brian F., they talk about no other parties has offered additional evidence. The problem with a referee is we talk about suspending support all the way to disestablishment of parentage. Pretty heavy stuff where a court might want to know a little more when that trial court passes final judgment. Or if I just tell you something today like, this lady's come within $3 of paying off her child support while this thing's been pending, wouldn't you want to know that before you pass judgment? I think it should be left in the court's discretion rather than an absolute bar.
What's the case number that you're referring to that was not published?
They're in the brief. I have all 4.
Okay.
Pardon me?
You say they're all 4 in your brief?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there's an additional one, which is that neither the state nor Brian offered any additional evidence. It's an inference that maybe they could have offered additional evidence.
And that's the problem.
That's part of the problem. And everybody says, well, Hoffmeister, you've had this wage information. Why didn't you offer this at the case in chief? I'll tell you why, because the testimony was better than my wage history. She said, being ordered to pay $50 a month, I earned $10 an hour, worked 45 hours a week, and then I had $8 an hour. She's ordered to pay $50 a month. I can do the math. That's $1,650 a month at least. I can show you the pay record showed very clearly for a period of 14 months while she was out of jail. She paid support 2 of those months, $3.17 for 2 months. I think 17 one other month and 450 another month. That's despite the fact she earned almost $5,000 in 1 quarter.
And you're saying this evidence was presented to
the
referee?
Yes, the evidence to the referee was strictly the wage information she gave of $10 an hour, $8 an hour, 45 hours a week. My evidence that I tried to put in at the exception was actually her real wage history, which showed the last quarter of 2014, she earned $5,000 and paid nothing. And since the time of the referee hearing to the time the district court heard it, 3 months later, she hadn't paid a dime, hardly paid anything. I think a court would want to know. I'm sure a court, if the defendant showed up and said, this person's really been trying, they'd want to see that pay record.
Well, I'm going back to the language of the statute.
Okay.
43-16-13. And it says, "The court receives the findings, recommendations of the referee and the exceptions filed by the parties or party." And then the court then reviews the child support referee's report and can accept or reject any of it and enter judgment based on the court's own determination. I see nothing in there that talks about a new evidentiary hearing.
I think I would say that let's read the last sentence of the sentence before that, and to have further hearing before such court upon final disposition. Read the sentence before that. I take that last sentence to mean the court independently reviews that report. You don't have to have an exception to have that last sentence apply. The court can say, this is hogwash, I'm not going to enter this order. The exception more applies to the first sentence, further rehearing. And further hearing, what would a further hearing mean?
Well, we have hearings and we have evidentiary hearings.
True.
This just says hearing.
Just says hearing, doesn't it? And I think anything the court would be material to the court in its own discretion. I have a problem. I'm just going to tell you, this is not on the record. We conduct exception hearings from A to Z. We literally sometimes rehab the whole case rehashed, or we do it on the record. There's not a clarification of how these things are handled. This 14-day rule is by court rule, and Douglas County has a different rule on that even. And you read the statute doesn't say anything about 14 days. It just says you have the right to take exceptions. We take the 14 days from the court rule. And that's kind of the problem here. I would like to have had that information on her wages might have been just as damning to me at the final hearing for a judge as it would be from the referee. But the testimony was better than the wage history. The pay history speaks for itself. 10 months of payment of zero while the person was working. We get into quite a discussion about a present ability to pay, and Judge Wright basically overrules the referee. I don't think the overrule is a good word. He just basically accepts the report, or you don't, just like a fact finder, and says, well, she's probably in contempt. She has long periods of time. She can't explain why she wasn't paying. But he said, well, she's disabled, she has this and that. The fact is that she's cleaning rooms, not being paid for a discount rent. That reflects not having a present ability to pay. I would think it'd be a little cumbersome to have somebody earning $10 an hour, managerial position, then they show up in front of you, well, I'm not working today. Some of that past wage and work history does reflect a present ability to work. You're just choosing not to work now. Nothing had changed from her time of full employment. She'd just gotten out of jail. That's 45 days before that. The present ability to work is not just I'm not working now. You don't have the ability to work. You cannot work. And I think it was rather stretched because she was trading, borrowing her wages for a reduced rate of rent. It's a cash underground economy. That's why I have a $50 a month order. It's low. It's not meant to be low. It started out for two kids. Now it's only for one child. I don't think it's a matter of error. I don't like to use a worse word than error, but I think the person should be found in contempt, appropriately sanctioned, and an appropriate realistic purge order of something like $75 a month, or you go to jail for a specified period of time. I suggested 24 months as a purge period because the child's probably 17 now. We need to have something realistic that she can be expected to pay.
So as I understand, your position is, even based upon the record that we have before us, without this other additional information, the district court was wrong in finding that she was not convicted.
Yeah, the oral testimony is better than the wage history. That's why I didn't put it in. I said, well, we better be truthful about what she really did her. And that's what I was put in. I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Bergen Shoemaker, and I am with the law firm of Bruner, Frank, and Carney, and I represent the appellee, Don Lockwood, in this case. As the court's aware, there are two issues before you today. One, whether my client was actually in contempt of court for nonpayment of child support, and two, whether the exception hearing before the district court should have been a trial de novo on the record or a trial de novo. Our position is that the district court was correct, both in holding that my client was not in contempt as well as hearing, or finding that the exception hearing was a trial de novo on the record and not accepting additional evidence.
What's your best argument that it's trial de novo on the record?
Well, Your Honor, I will skip ahead to that. According to Nebraska Revised Statute 43-16-13, that states that parties shall have the right to take exceptions and findings to the recommendations. 4-110 of the Nebraska Child Support Referee Rules states that upon a party taking exception to the referee's recommendations, the court shall conduct a review on the report of the referee. I think that that implies that it's a trial de novo on the record. Both that statute and the Nebraska Child Support Referee Rules both imply that when an initial determination is made by the child support referee, that the referee is acting as a trial court, and then upon a party taking exception to that referee recommendation and report, that the district court acts as an appellate court. And it is well established, and I did list a string cite in my brief, that the standard of review of an appellate court in child support cases is de novo on the record.
But didn't the unicameral, when they passed the amendments to the current law, take the position that you can't have, or the Supreme Court had made the ruling that the referee cannot make binding decisions?
That is correct. And so,
and if they can't make binding decisions, how can it be an appeal?
Well, Your Honor, that's a good question. I think that the big picture here is what makes most sense and what is the best use of judicial time and resources. If in a contempt hearing such as this, it's inevitable that one party's not going to like the ruling. And so if we say that, okay, that was just one hearing and we can move up to the district court and rehear all of the issues, I think that it strips the referee from all of the power that he has, and whether or not that's binding or not.
Would it be all the evidence, or would it only be additional evidence?
Well, I believe that the state's position, if I understand correctly, is that it's a completely new trial. And so we can hear all of the evidence once again. The state can offer additional evidence. We could offer additional evidence. And again, my position is that that just doesn't make sense.
So in the statute, where it says it goes to the district court to have a further hearing, what's that mean?
Well, Your Honor, that's a good question. I interpreted that as a further hearing, such as the exception hearing, where parties are able to present argument. I don't think that it indicates that that should be an evidentiary hearing.
What if the judge wants to hear something?
I think that, that the state cites a case, and it is state on behalf of BM versus BF, and that's cited in the state's appeal. And in that case, what happened was the referee heard the child support issue, and then it went up to the district court for an exception hearing. There were issues with the paternity acknowledgement and whether the father was under duress or fraud, and so when signing that, and then the court determined that, okay, we need to have a further hearing on this. And so I think that it's within the court's discretion if they want to have a further hearing, but I don't think that either party is automatically entitled to a new evidentiary hearing.
So it's your position that when we're writing this, we would say that, generally speaking, that the recommendations of the referee are submitted to the district court, and unless an exception has been filed, the court shall determine de novo on the record whether or not the recommendations of the referee should be followed. If either party files an exception, then the judge can look at what the exception is and determine whether or not additional evidence is needed, and has the ability to give notice to the parties that they should be prepared to provide additional evidence on a certain question. Is that, do I understand, is that what you're?
That is absolutely my position, yes.
Thank you.
And so going back to whether or not my client was in contempt, the evidence is clear that up until August of 2014, my client was in prison in Kansas. She was released, and then she went back to jail for a few more months. And while there were certainly periods of time that she was working, and the state is correct that she was earning up to $10 an hour, Sickler versus Sickler, and the site for that is 293 Nebraska 521, that's a 2016 case, Sickler versus Sickler states that the assets and financial condition of the individual must be taken into account, and the past ability to comply with the order does not show a present ability to comply. And so I think that's exactly what we're dealing with here. My client was actually incarcerated at the time that the order to show cause was filed on December 8th of 2015. She was released from jail on January 7th of 2016. The testimony reflects that just 3 or 4 days after she was released from jail, she started looking for jobs. The first place that she went was to the manager or landlord at the motel that she was living in. She asked if she could clean rooms in exchange for payment. The landlord didn't approve of that. However, he did negotiate that she could have a lower rate in exchange for her cleaning the rooms, but actual money was not exchanged. And so my position is that can't be considered income. She wanted it to be income, but that wasn't an option for her. So in the meantime, she went off and was applying for numerous jobs. There was an exhibit offered into evidence, I believe it was exhibit number 8, a stack of job applications that my client had submitted. And so she was certainly looking for a job. Unfortunately, the odds were stacked against her. And admittedly, some of that is her fault. She's a convicted felon. Her highest level of education is a GED. She has both physical and mental health limitations. She doesn't have a driver's license. And so getting a job was pretty hard for her. At the time that the trial had occurred, she hadn't gotten a job. She wanted to, but she wasn't able to do that. And so the court correctly found that she wasn't willfully disobeying the order requiring her to pay child support. And I'm going to butcher this name. It looks like Hosani versus Valazadea. It's 283 Nebraska 369. A 2012 case says that willful disobedience is an essential element necessary before a party can be held in contempt.
And that finding of no willful disobedience, which part of the standard of review do we use to review that finding?
Your Honor, well, Sickler versus Sickler points out a three-step review process for this court. One, that the trial court's resolution
I'm familiar with the three-part standard. I'm asking you which part of that applies to the court's determination that she was not willful.
Your Honor, I believe that that applies to the factual findings, and that's reviewed for clear error. I believe that the court needs to take into consideration her testimony as well as the evidence, the exhibits that were offered to find that she was indeed doing everything that she could to make the money in order to pay the child support order, but that she just couldn't, and so she was not willfully disobeying the order. And so if there are no further questions, I will ask that the court affirm the district court's order, both on the fact that my client was not in contempt of court for nonpayment, as well as the court's ruling that the exception hearing should be de novo on the record. Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you. How much time does the appellant have remaining?
1 minute.
Thank you.
Four points. This all started with the miscarriage of the referee saying, I failed to find the state met its burden. We've been patching and patching and patching since then. I prove she isn't delinquent. Just contempt, rebuttable presumption. This is not a Chapter 25 proceeding. There's a little more allowed to a referee and to the court to go further. Her current testimony, where she sat before the referee, she got $20 a room, $2.50 rooms a month is what it took to pay her $50. She didn't do it. Present ability right there. Although there's great testimony about disability, there's no medical or legal conclusion of the proof. I hate to use the word, it's plain error, a mistake, it's an error, factual error, it's a clear error. She's in contempt. We got hung up on failed to find. The burden's on her to prove she's not in contempt, and et cetera, et cetera. And it's an abuse of discretion for this court not to demand respect that its orders be obeyed. It's $50 a month, a teenager-sized award. You should be paying this. You're an adult person. Despite your felony history, you managed to work for $10 an hour.
Commissioner, before you leave, I did a little checking based upon what you were saying before. Are you familiar with Nebraska Court Rule 410, or excuse me, 4110?
Yes, right here.
Doesn't that specifically say that the party shall have the right to take exception within 14 days? Isn't that what
14 days? That does say 14 days. The statute says nothing.
Right, but the court rule says 14, so that's why that comes into play.
And, since you mentioned the 14 days, is it 14 days from the referee announces that decision, 14 days that the report's sent out, or is it 14 days after the report is received into the court? That's quite a problem. I always file the exception within 14 days of the oral recommendation, because we don't really say when that 14 days starts ticking.
I just understood you to say you didn't know where the 14 days came from.
It came from court rule.
And I just wanted to make sure.
It is court rule. I'm sorry if I misunderstood. Now, Douglas County has a 5-day standard for contempt.
And that's, we don't need to talk about Douglas County, so thank you for answering the question.
Sorry, thank you.
Counsel, you are both excused, and the case is submitted, and we appreciate your appearance here today. Next case this morning is Plains Radiology versus Good Samaritan Hospital.